This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. It is Saturday, April 28th, 2006, 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California. Today, Geek News. The entire first half of the show and the second half of the show, we welcome your questions and comments about technology.
Geek Speak is a production of KUSP, Central Coast Public Radio, kusp.org. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
We're through being cool. We're through being cool. Eliminate the minis and the twits.
Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. During the second half of the show, well, during the first half, geek news. We're going to talk about news stories and things of like that nature. And during the second half of the show, I'll welcome you to join the conversation. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Or contact us now. Go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. I'll give out that contact information again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. GeekSpeak is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation, and offering one-appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. Earlier this week, I learned about the passing of a man that I learned a lot from in my youth. This show is dedicated to Dale Schofield, who helped teach me to understand people better and respect diverse opinions. I'll miss you, Dale. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks Miles Elam, technical trainer at Surf Control, and Sean Cleveland, technical marketing manager at NVIDIA. Hi, geeks. Welcome to Geek Speak.
Good morning.
Good morning, Lyle.
Miles, why don't you try that again? You up?
Good morning.
You're up. Okay, so we're not having headphones for you guys. You just hear my beautiful voice. And when phone calls come in, I'm going to have to take them all by my lonely. It's so horrible because last night I had this nightmare. I mean, all night long. I mean, my daughter was screaming too. But all night long I had this nightmare about not...
You guys should be able to...
Thank you, Charlie. About not having... not being prepared on the radio, being like on the radio and nothing going on, you know, just complete nightmare, disaster kind of situation.
Okay, so you guys should be able to.
And here it is. It's striking. You know, it's perfect. Are you guys? Do you have headphones yet? Plug into this. This is working.
Yes, I'm switching over.
Okay, the guys are working on it. We're gonna make it work. To do our first news story, should we start with Mr. Cleveland?
Wow, I hear you now.
Yay, we hear each other. Sean, let's do the first news story with you, or Miles, do you want to handle it?
Doesn't matter to me.
Local company, Seagate.
I've heard of that company. You know, hard drive company.
Large storage company.
Sure.
Who we've had on the show many times. Has just released a 750 gig hard drive.
One drive?
Yes.
Wait, so what? How exactly can you equate? What is 750 gigabytes for the audience out there?
Or for me?
It's a whole lot of space for data.
It's like seven
times.
Take
it from me. It's a lot.
Well, how about this then? Take a CD... and take 1,000 of them.
And okay. That's what it is.
Do you guys really want to know?
And it's bigger than that.
It's bigger than 1,000 CDs. That's true.
Okay. A 750 gig drive could hold the same amount of data as 750 pickup trucks loaded with books, or the amount of data contained in books produced from 37,500 trees.
Wow. That's a lot of books.
So this new drive, it looks like it's available.
But is that 20 bond paper, or is that like, you know, Bible style? Like,
yeah, rice paper.
Thin sheet.
It's the Barracuda 7200.10.
So it runs at 7200.
It's a version 10 line of the Barracuda drives. And
that clears pricing. It up.
Yeah.
It's a 3.5-inch drive. And
so it's not available on a laptop. Darn.
No.
Well, that's great.
The price point, yeah.
It's expensive.
It's less than $1 a megabyte.
A gigabyte,
yeah, excuse me.
A dollar a meg.
Much less than $1 a gigabyte, so not bad.
That's good. All right, thank you for that. That's a good thing to know. Isn't Seagate and some other company, they merged forces about 6 months ago or 3 months ago?
Yeah, Seagate bought Maxtor.
Okay, so that's a Maxtor drive too, then, I would guess. They're labeling them as both, or are they removing one of the companies?
The Barracuda line
is very Seagate.
Is Seagate's sure. line of hard drives, so it's most likely Seagate's technology.
Well, thank you, Mr. Cleveland. Mr. Elam.
Well, speaking of a 750 gigabyte drive and possibly needing a lot of them, are ISPs. Due to some records being done in U.S. Congress or some legislation that's being worked on, there is a proposal for making ISPs keep all of their records for at least 1 year after their subscriber goes away. In other words, keeping track of wherever the user goes, whatever protocols they're using, all the content.
For a year or?
For a year after the user.
For the duration of the customer plus a year.
Right.
That's horrible. So you're supposed to save all information about every user?
Right. And it's pretty loose as to what it means by ISP. So I think
it's time to start using secure SSL everywhere.
Strictly speaking, I mean, who knows? Maybe we're responsible because we have a mail server with multiple accounts.
Like, oh, man.
It's any time that you would have a service for other folks. Like, what gets described
as being
an ISP?
Is that going to pass? Is that going to actually become a law?
Well, if people don't say anything about it, then
I want to say something about this. How do I fight that? It's ridiculous.
So what I will do is I will post up a link to our website with the language of the law.
Okay.
And, of the proposal, I should say. And then folks can look up whoever their local representative is. Most likely it's going to be folks in the Central Coast.
Sure. Okay. And contact them and tell them no.
Just say no.
I think it might be prudent for us to have an ISP on. You know, we could have the guys over from Cruise.io come
right.
over.
But I also want to give some context to folks. It's not just sniffing. I'm also thinking of ISPs. With the amount of data that we're talking about here is ridiculous.
When I mean, I'm assuming about it's traffic logs. It's not copies of everything that's being sent.
Right.
That would be insane.
Right.
So
be
it must be logs.
Of
just IP
but even so, that's for all the users. Like, think of every ISP that's going, just the local ones, but for the national
the
ones.
The thing that's so frustrating about that, yeah, if the national ones, it would be insane. But the thing that's so ridiculously frustrating about this is that if you want to do things discreetly online, if you didn't want your ISP to know what's going on, there are tons of free services and technology to enable that. I mean, we could, for example, post something on our GeekSpeak server that was a proxy, and the connection between that machine and my machine was encrypted. Then at home, my ISP would know nothing about what I was doing on the internet.
Shh, be quiet. I'll add that to the legislation.
Oh, right. Yeah. Thank you, Miles, for the update on that.
Depends on what level of encryption you use. Let them add it.
Because of my nightmare last night, I want to try to stretch the boundaries of what I normally do on the show. So, and that was that. You know, I was totally unprepared for the entire program.
Which you've got to tell us more about this stream, Lyle.
It was really kind of freaky.
You said something about a microphone on a pole.
Yeah. So this is the dream. We're at a party. I mean, you guys were there sometimes. Whenever I needed you, you were not there. We're at this party. There's a whole bunch of people talking. A whole bunch of KOSP crew. Like Johnny Simmons was there, and they were all kind of preparing for something else. So no one was paying attention, and I was on the board. And I had this long, like, broom handle with a microphone on it trying to do interviews. So to talk myself, I had to, like, use both my hands and kind of stretch it out. It was bad.
That's terrible.
And a lot of ums and ahs, and a lot of me saying, this is KOSP, Central Coast Public Radio.
Over and over.
Like, imagine a half an hour of that. And you pretty much
I can't imagine that, because I would have turned it off after 5 minutes.
Why don't you turn that dream off and move on?
I just kept like, getting woken up from my daughter screaming.
Change the channel, man.
No, don't change the station. All right, I got something. For years, for maybe 2 years, I've been using this product called SketchUp. It's a 3D sketching program. The idea is it's as simple as making notes on
a napkin. Yeah, I've seen that. It comes in a tablet. It's got a red border on it.
No, it's got
two dials on the top.
No, it's like that. No, it's Etch-a-Sketch.
Oh, that's Etch-a-Sketch.
So SketchUp, it allows you to make 3D models extremely fast. Is that the data extruding,
like you grab and you make a block longer?
Yeah, so
shorter.
You make a rectangle, and then you say, I want to just pull this rectangle up, and then you can cut a circle in it and pull this. And it's really fast. Most CADing programs, when I start using them, just I get lost. And I'm
What are you using them for? So Lyle told me this morning. So I used it to model your house for Google Maps. I'm like, what are you talking about? And then he looked at me and he said, oh, I didn't send that to you? What?
Data islands. You know, the first thing I used it for real, like, construction, this is really fun, I modeled my father's coffin before I built my father's coffin. I modeled that in SketchUp. So I've been using it for a while. And anytime I make a wood project, I'll do that. I know, isn't that fun? Sorry about that.
My momentum has just been stopped.
Yes.
Let me reach across the table
Here
and
we
slap
go
you
with
in the
these
face.
Oh, so uplifting Geek Speak episode.
I'm so sorry. Google bought SketchUp a couple weeks ago.
What does that mean? They're going to make it available to everyone online for free?
I wish Google's like that. Actually, SketchUp's never had a free version. They had an 8-hour demo. You could run it for 8 hours, which is just enough to see how cool it is. But now, it just got the release last night that Google and SketchUp, now that owns SketchUp, decided to release a free version. And the free version does pretty much everything you want to be
able
to do.
So there is a free version.
It's being released right now. There's a link on our site. I don't know exactly.
Is it SketchUp.google.com?
No. Just go to geekspeak.org and click on that link, and you'll get it from there. Actually, we've got to make the show live. Somebody make the show live? Miles, will you make the show live?
Oh, sure. I guess.
So when
who's next news story? It's Sean's next news story. So Miles, you get to make the show live.
So when Google buys these software companies and puts this stuff up for free, how is it that their stock is worth so much and they're doing so well?
I know.
But it's really cool that they're doing this kind of stuff, and they're making a lot of things available for free. And like last week, we had Think Free on, right, and they had bought a company that competed with them.
Well, no, the company that does Sketch Free is competitor with, I mean, with Think Free is a competitor with Microsoft in Korea. In any case, but they do release a free Office
no,
suite.
Google bought.
Oh, Google. Google bought another company that does
Rightly.
That, that's right, Rightly, which
that
is
does,
another
Yeah, that makes
Office,
Office available for free. Sure. Really cool stuff. Anyway, let's get on to some news.
Yes, please.
I got a couple of quick news stories. TiVo's releasing a box that allows users to record 2 shows at once.
Oh, didn't that already exist?
No.
So this means 2 tuners.
2 tuners, yeah.
Nice.
So that's kind of cool.
Because a TiVo running doesn't cause you to have as much television you ever want to watch in any way. So
I've
need to
never
to
found
twice.
A time where I've needed to record 2 shows at once.
Well, I mean, you know, if you're watching a show and you want to record a show at the same time, I guess if you're watching the show, you don't necessarily need to record it, huh?
I never turn on a TV to watch a show, so I never run into the scenario that, oh, there's something else on.
Do you watch any live television?
No.
Me neither. Of course, I don't have reception. So. Oh. I listen to the radio. The radio is better for you. Feed your brain. All right, thanks for that announcement. Can you put a 750 gig drive in a TiVo?
I don't know.
All right, you have to get one.
Depends on how hot they run, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. So, and I don't know how loud they are either. But the Barracuda line is typically pretty quiet, so who knows. So Nintendo Revolution named Nintendo named their new box, renamed the Revolution, which is competitor to Xbox 360 coming out later this year, to Wii.
Wii!
That's the name of the new...
And it's spelled W-I-I.
Why?
So the name is pronounced Wii. It's meant to invoke the feeling of cooperation that comes when people play games together. So it is now called the Nintendo Wii.
You know, see, when I play games with Miles, I just feel like I'm a piece of meat. So I don't know why that's Wii.
I'm sorry, you need to clarify that one.
I think we won't. Next news story.
What differentiates the Nintendo Wii from Xbox 360 and the PlayStation 3 that's coming out is a one-handed controller. Supposed to be pretty neat, actually.
It's the remote control thing, right?
Yeah. You play a game with like a remote control type.
And you move it back and forth.
Right.
See, this thing looks dangerous. Because, I mean, I've played, you know, games before. I don't have a game system right now, but like Nintendo before, and you have the paddles, and you're playing like a racing game. You're trying to go around the corner fast, and you start moving your hands back and forth. Right. And there's people next to you, smack them. With this thing, where it actually gets triggered by you moving it, I can see some horrible
All I can think about is a fishing game. I'm trying to think about what other games they would have, you know.
No, supposedly you can use it like a mouse. I mean, it's
right.
It's
got a gyroscope in it, probably.
Sure. I've played with those, and the thing is, there's not a lot of tactile feedback. No,
I'm surprised Dee Dee is not online this morning with us because she is a huge Nintendo fan.
That's true. She'll probably have one. She'll buy one of these.
She'll be the first one to own one in New
York. Thank you, Sean. Mr. Elam.
Sorry.
I keep on saying Mr. Elam. Miles.
Yeah, see, I have all of these thoughts now in my head, these images of the first time I ever saw someone play Doom.
Yeah.
With their head just like bobbing side to side as they're like trying to look around a corner without actually looking around the corner. Anyway, so... speaking of other legislation, I seem to be on this roll now. There is a new piece of legislation being put forth. It's called S-2644.
Ooh, being put riveting.
Yes. Sorry. It's being put forward by our Senator, Dianne Feinstein, and Senator Graham, a Republican of South Carolina. It's dubbed the Perform Act. And the actual thing behind it is aiming at punishing satellite radio for offering its subscribers devices the ability to record off the air.
Okay.
Yeah, so, but within the bill is a provision that would require music webcasters to use DRM-laden streaming formats rather than MP3s. So,
you gotta be kidding me.
No.
Wait, it would allow people to do this? What do you mean, allow?
It would force them to use them. They would not be allowed to use MP3 streaming anymore. Wait, for any type of...
And Feinstein's supporting this bill?
Yeah. Well, assuming she knew about this.
So what you're saying right now, we are streaming KOSP's content, 128 kilobit MP3 stream, anywhere in the world you can hear what we're doing right now.
It depends upon the content that is being streamed.
Okay. But the idea would be that some of that would be restricted so that you couldn't...
Today, webcasters that want to transmit major label music or something like that are entitled to do so under a statutory license set out in Section 114D of the Copyright Act.
Sure.
So long as they follow the rules and pay a royalty, webmasters can play whatever music they like using whatever streaming format they like.
Uh-huh.
But under this proposal, that stops. They would have to use something that prohibits any type of... open access on the other end. There'd have to be a specific player that didn't allow any saving.
Just people don't get this. I mean, it's so frustrating. Radio is a perfect example of this. When you hear music being done by like DJs here at the station, you're more apt to be aware of the musician and of the CD and more apt to purchase it. If the station doesn't do that and restricts it or doesn't play things of that nature, you don't hear it and therefore music doesn't spread as well. Having broadcast concepts empowers musicians to make more music. It's just that's how it works. So this idea that we'd say, okay, now because it's going through the computer, let's make it so no one can copy it. Well, of course, if you can hear it, you can copy it. So that's out. I mean, I hate this.
But it's also that idea of, well, they're taking revenue away from the casters.
Sure.
But at the same time, we've had audio cassettes for years.
Right.
We've had different ways of you can hook up. Like in a lot of decks, actually have a radio and a tape deck right there that you could just record off of a live. Radio feed.
It's just that with a tape, you can't pass it to 16 million people quickly.
But at the same time, this webcast or in general, that just means the distribution methods are available to the music companies that they don't have to make a CD anymore.
Right.
Those costs will go away as well.
And there's money in it. You see iTunes. iTunes recently did 1 billion songs. Did you hear about that? They did their 1 billionth song download.
Nice.
Yeah.
But I mean, so people are paying for this. The whole argument of... that end user can copy so many times for free just to a lot of different people. Well, so can the music companies.
Right.
So where's...
Oh, I see what you're saying. Where's the...
Everyone's on a level playing field here.
All right. You listen to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. That was Miles Elam. We also have Sean Cleveland here. We're doing news and talking about things that happened this week, the first half of the show. The second half of the show, I'm going to invite you to call in. That's about 5 minutes. You can call us then, and I'll give out that information at that point. Should I do another story? Because I've got another thing that I want to talk about.
Yep. We've got more news. Let's keep going.
Every week, I tell, talk about what you guys do for a living. I kind of introduce you and talk about it. But I never really talk about what I do. And every once in a while, one of you guys will ask what I do.
Yeah.
No one really cares.
We don't care.
All right, next news story. No, I work at
the just a bunch of students who pay large amounts of money to spend time with you.
There you go. I work up at UCSC, and I'm the technical coordinator for Masters of Fine Arts program in Digital Arts and New Media.
It's a cool program, actually.
It's a pretty cool program, which basically means I get together resources for artists to do high-tech art. That's a general concept of it. We are launching, in partnership with Porter College, which is one of the colleges up at the University of California, a festival that starts this Thursday, May 4th. And the opening is going to be at the MAW, the Museum of Art and History, Santa Cruz Museum of Art and History. And it's...
Where's that located?
It's right on Front and...
Is that the big red ball?
Front and Cooper. Yeah, the big red ball, the McPherson Center. That's the name of the building.
Right. When you stand there and you look off toward downtown, you see the Cinema 9. It's like it's right there. So
yeah, that
take
same
the Cinema
street.
9 and then head away from the Cinema 9. Yeah. Then,
in fact, everyone be from Santa Cruz. People have been here a long time know the Cooper House, which is right next to the mall. So it's right. It's right there. Anyway, Front Street, and if you want to Google it, it's Front and Cooper Streets in Santa Cruz. And I went in earlier this week, a couple days ago, to install some of the shows. We got these artists from kind of all over the place that...
Oh, it's just not from the program.
No, actually, the ones at the MA are visiting artists that we're curating.
Oh, interesting.
So we've got Jim Campbell, which I want to talk about in a second, Paul Demarens, and Camille Utterback. Now, Camille Utterback's piece is a projection piece where you dance in the a place that a camera is on, and your movements are translated into kind of a moving, kind of Kandinsky-ish painting that's on the wall. Really cool. I haven't actually seen it run. I've seen stills of what the imagery looks like, and I put up the projector yesterday. It's going to be fun. Paul Demarens, I'm probably messing up his name. He's a professor up at Stanford, and he is doing another projection interactive piece. And then the piece that really got me going, okay, I got to contact all the geeks and tell everybody to get here. It's going to be a great show, is Jim Campbell. And Jim Campbell's piece, you guys got to see this on Thursday. You got to come, okay? Bring your family, Sean. It's at the MAW, Santa Cruz Museum of Art and History. And it's open to the public. Jim Campbell's piece is an array of LEDs, of white LEDs, 32 by 24 inch separated. So there's like 700 LED pixels. With then an image in front of it. And the pixels are kind of like a television screen in that they're all changed quality based on the imagery. But it's done in such an aesthetic that it's really appealing. One of these is just kind of imagery of waves crashing. And to see it in the space, it was such an exciting thing. The guy makes this circuit board, right? He wires the circuit board, and it's huge. It's big. It's got all these LEDs over it. I don't know. I got really excited about it. I think the show is going to be amazing. And since it's open to the public, I really want people to know about it. And then there's actually a few events this next weekend. And Daria's, my wife's piece on Talk of the Bay on Friday, we'll talk with some of the students about their show, which opens on Friday. So you can learn all about this. It's at the Digital Arts Festival. It's going to be in Santa Cruz, May 4th through the 14th. A whole bunch of different things going on. You can go to geekspeak.org to see that. That was a big plug for my work. But it's technical. It's geeky. It's okay. Mr. Elam, get another news story, man? Or is it Sean's turn?
It's my turn.
All right. It's Mr. Sean, what's up?
So Apple patented a method to create displays that can take pictures and videos.
Right. So the camera's not even above it. It's in it.
Right.
That's disturbing.
So,
or at least the myriad of cameras. So it's actually a bunch of different cameras.
Yeah, they've integrated image sensors in between the pixels that are on a screen.
So the screen itself is
hundreds
also a camera.
Of them. Yes. So hundreds, if not thousands, of these tiny image sensing elements that with software can actually,
show video.
They can
show
actually stitch together an entire image.
Disturbing.
So as you're looking at the screen, the screen's looking at you and sending that to the rest of the world.
Yeah.
So
I don't know how I feel about that. I wonder if it's similar to... As phones became dual directional, where you didn't have to switch between. I guess they've always kind of been that way. What, Miles? Do you like this technology or not?
We are at war with East Asia. We have always been at war with East Asia.
What?
What does that mean?
See, people don't read enough today. That obvious reference to 1984, Big Brother, the telescreens, where the content you were getting out was also receiving information, like being able to watch. But I actually think it is a good thing. As long as you know that it's being used. Of course, any technology can be abused, but it just means...
Not any technology. Okay, you're right.
But, for example...
can you imagine the virus that turns this on?
Well, no.
Know that your computer has been watching you, or somebody has been.
But you're talking about a general purpose device, like a computer, if it has this. But think if you had a equivalent of a phone, but it's a video phone, one that doesn't have a small little camera and then a screen. It's actually you're talking into the screen.
Well, I mean,
I love the natural evolution.
I love the idea.
The government will just want to tap into that, right? Just make sure that
scary and all that. It's kind of weird to have cameras that you're not aware that they exist. That's a little disturbing. But I got to say that when you're doing web chat, like Sean and I, when we launched PC Extremist years ago, I was living in Los Angeles, he was living in San Francisco and Berkeley, right? And we communicated all the time and wrote code together and worked on articles together, and we're using web chat. And the thing that was most frustrating about that, the way that you really communicate well is you look in the camera. You don't look at the screen because you want to have the person see you as looking at them. So it's this constant thing of trying to think about looking at the camera versus looking at the screen.
But
so this
now
solves
you're actually
that problem.
Looking at the screen.
You look right at the screen and you're looking at them. It's going to be really cool in that regard. All right. I want to start inviting people to... this is great. I want to start inviting people. Why don't I just do it? That'd be a little more effective. GeekSpeak is supported by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Felton, offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, Notary Public, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com. You listen to GeekSpeak, and now it's time for you to call in. Our fellow web geek and geek in general is ready to take your calls. Rick Fillman awaits you with your comments and questions on technology. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can use the internet. Go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. All right. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. You're listening to GeekSpeak. My name is Lyle Troxell. The geeks this morning are Miles Elam and Sean Cleveland. And we've been chatting about geek news. But you can call in now. I'll give those numbers in just one more second. This program is supported by Cruise.io, providing local and nationwide internet services, including DSL 6.0, spam filters, and virus protection. Information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. Please join our conversation for 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877, or, of course, send us an email. Go to geekspeak.org. Click on Contact Us. All right, we've got calls pouring in already, but please feel free to join us. I'm going to go on to the next news story. Whose turn is it?
I think it was mine.
Okay.
It's Miles. Go ahead.
Hey, Miles.
Well, see, now I have to actually find a news story.
Oh, you weren't prepared?
You should probably talk about Congress writing the broad new digital copyright bill.
Oh, that's
okay,
a good one.
I'll talk about that one.
Or then. The Sony download one that Drew sent in. I do want to talk about that, too. But go on.
If you've been following the show for a long period of time, you've heard us talk about the Digital Millennium Copyright Act.
If anyone's been following the show for a long period of time, they're not anymore. So anyway, go on.
Digital Millennium Copyright Act was actually a bit of a departure from existing copyright law, but it was a law that brought in a lot of things that were specific to computer and downloading and transfer of information. Well, there's a new version of this coming out that is being proposed that would expand the Digital Millennium Copyright's restrictions on software.
I thought we were trying to get rid of some of those restrictions.
Yeah, well, some folks are trying to put restrictions so that you cannot make software that can bypass copyright protections, and you know, also that software must grant federal police more wiretapping enforcement powers.
Okay.
So, not much more on that, just...
You still don't like it?
I don't like it squared.
Wow, news.
And I'll put a link to the story up on the website.
All right. You know what? Let me see if we've got people coming in. We do. Look at that. We've got calls and we're ready to take them. So let's go ahead and say in Santa Cruz, let's go ahead and say hello to, I think we were talking to Lynn. Lynn, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm here.
Is this Lynn?
Yes, this is Lynn. Question for you. Do you guys have a preference on manufacturers for external hard disk enclosures, you know, like FireWire or USB? I've got a variety of extra disks that I have lying about, and I was thinking about just, you know, popping them into an enclosure, but, you know, there seems to be a wide variety of manufacturers that I'm not necessarily aware of or familiar with.
Well, one, don't get a FireWire drive unless you actually have a FireWire card or something that has a FireWire port on it. So USB 2.0 is going to be...
I can't hear a word.
Oh, you can't hear him?
Oh.
I can hear you, but I couldn't hear the other person.
Now you can hear Miles.
Ah, there we go.
Miles.
Unless you have a FireWire, like a FireWire port already on your motherboard or a FireWire card, that kind of rules that out. USB 2.0 is going to be available on a wider variety of computers out there. Strictly speaking, FireWire is more efficient in terms of CPU utilization.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why it's used on digital video cameras.
Right, but in general, you're not going to see that big of a difference in the real world between the USB 2.0 enclosures and the FireWire ones. Yeah. In terms of brands, I don't know. I went up to online and purchased one from Rosewill. Didn't have a fan on it. Works just fine. Works for any 3.5-inch.
Basically, there's not much difference in enclosures, I think. I mean, as long as you got USB 2.0, you don't really have to worry about it. The one thing, make sure that your drives are going to match the format of the enclosure. So the enclosure is going to be IDE or serial ATA.
I can't think of any name brand companies who actually build these things. I went to Friars recently and looked at them, and I hadn't heard of any of those companies.
There is a difference, though, in terms of sound and the fans that are on some of them versus other ones.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'd get a non-fan one, but you got to make sure there's some airflow.
Yeah.
I've got one of those Porsche-designed ones. I think it's designed by Porsche. Or is it Fiat?
Ferrari?
I think it's Ferrari. Yeah, Ferrari-designed. It seems to work fine, but I get a lot of complaints that if you're doing a lot of editing on video, where you're
driving these threads,
it overheats. So I don't do that a lot. But I would make sure that there's good airflow and no fan. Or if there is a fan,
that's true.
Try it.
Those little fans can be whiny.
Really loud. Yeah.
Like I said, the one that I have, the Rosewill, it's an all-aluminum case, and it acts as a big heatsink for
makes
it.
Makes a lot of sense.
Rosewill?
Rosewill, yeah.
Rosewill. There you go. There's our recommendation.
Thank you much.
Thank you so much for the call.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right. Let's go ahead and take another call, shall we? Monterey, Tom, welcome to GeekSpeak. Hello, Tom.
Hello.
Hello?
Hi.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Is this Al in Felton?
Yeah.
Okay. We lost Tom. Tom, call back. Al, what's your question?
I was curious on the actual external enclosures. What I ran across was a little device that was that I found very useful called a JBOD from Adonix.
Okay.
Oh, Adonix, yeah. Then.
Yeah, and what it is a little two IDE ATA 133 controllers on a single card for about $60 and a USB 2 controller. Now, I've tested it with at about 22, 23 meg per second.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually works, and that's on the end of a 16-foot cord with a hub and so forth. So functionally, it's better than the USB 2 specs, and it's real cheap in terms of putting together NAS.
So describe this thing to us.
Yeah, it's just a little square circuit board with a USB 2 connector and two IDE headers.
Right.
Yeah,
I've seen these.
Yeah. Now the nice thing about it is it'll see any disk out there, and you get the full bandwidth of the disk through the controller, whereas the cheap USB ones are extremely problematic.
Yeah, this is a pretty technically rich piece of equipment. You actually kind of build your own enclosure around this.
That's great, right.
This is what's used in enclosure NAS devices, enclosures, that sort of thing.
Yeah, but the thing is, you can buy an enclosure for $10 surplus.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And then you just use the power from that and then go ahead and...
Especially those old SCSI, they had those big SCSI enclosures and nobody uses SCSI for external...
We just put one of these boxes
in. SCSI 1, you can just put this in.
Yeah, it's absolutely perfect for that.
And this is great. I love it.
Yeah, very geeky.
Great idea,
like
yeah.
Yeah, and you can use more than it now. You can use more than one JBOD on Windows XP, but it seems to fail on 2000 for some reason, which is frustrating, but it's real.
Yeah.
And there's other aspects to it that are really good. What I found, and I'd like you guys to comment on, is that what I found is that the transmission of SCSI commands across the FireWire bus and the USB 2 bus are such that I can run a high-end dual burner on USB 2.
Sure.
But I get all kinds of flow problems on FireWire, and I just can't do it. It won't hit at top speed.
I think that's probably drivers of your FireWire card. FireWire interface, because I have no problem doing FireWire burning from my
at a full sustained 12 meg per second.
My burner doesn't need that speed, so no.
Pardon?
So I don't know. I haven't actually burned
it
that
speed. Yeah. Yeah, I usually stick with USB 2 in Windows environment.
Supposedly USB 2 is slightly better than FireWire. And then, of course, there's FireWire 800, which is supposed to just blow the socks out of two, but I haven't actually used any hardware that...
Yeah, nobody else has.
Right. I've got a port on my machine, but I've got nothing to plug into.
I mean, if you've got FireWire on a PC, you're pretty much using the TI chip. And
right. There's another aspect to the JBOD thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's very useful. For $20, you can get yourself a USB 2 switch, and you hit, scroll lock twice on any machine that's hooked up to the switch, your devices, all your burners, your NAS, whatever, just automatically moves over to your new machine.
Right. So it's a KVM, but it also does USB, and it is pretty clean. We have some of those here at the station to do some of the work between different computers,
right.
And they're great.
So for a total of $100, you can put together an extremely sophisticated environment.
Well, thank you. We'll add those links to the site. I really appreciate your call.
No problem.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And Tom called back, thank goodness. Tom from Santa Cruz? No, Tom from Monterey. Welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Wonderful to hear your show.
Thank you.
I have two questions, actually, today. One is, how can I integrate a radio station offered through the Internet with real audio into iTunes?
You can't. Go on.
It's not possible.
No, unfortunately. I mean, there might be a hack of some kind that allows QuickTime to play real. But basically, no, real is one of those formats that's really defined by the company. So, you pretty much have to play it with real. I could be wrong. Some hackers might be able to find out a way to do this. Basically, iTunes can play anything that that QuickTime can play. That's actually why on a Windows machine, when you install iTunes, you have to install QuickTime, because it's actually the tool that unencodes things. So I would assume that if you got a plugin for QuickTime that could handle Reel, then iTunes would be able to handle it. But basically, you contact the source and you say, please stop doing Reel because it's proprietary and it's really frustrating.
Yeah, and it's insidious.
It
spreads itself into my computer in all kinds of other little ways that I don't like.
My trick when installing a new machine is I install Reel first, and then I start installing other things and tell other things to take over control of everything they can. And that way, Reel only has control over the things that it's the only thing it can play. Do you follow?
Okay.
Yeah. That's the way I try to restrict Reel as much as possible.
Okay. And my next question is whether or not I can anticipate that if I upgrade to the Intel-based Apple computers of the near future, whether I'm going to have to invest in all new software. I already have a Mac running 10.3.9.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yes and no. The new Intel Macintoshes can run all the stuff that from the old machine. It just doesn't run it very well. It does interpretation through a thing called Rosetta, I believe. But basically, it's emulation of the G4, G5 architecture. So, you're like Photoshop, for example, is going to run slower on an Intel Mac than it would on a G5.
It doesn't run real fast on the G5.
No. Well, the dual, 4 gigahertz, whatever they are, it runs pretty fast, but that's a pretty expensive machine. Yeah, so you're going to have to buy new software. Now, when you buy the Intel Mac, all the core Macintosh apps show up on there, and it's no problem. So all the ones that you like, iTunes, for example, there's an Intel version of it. So
right, and there's their mail program and Safari and the balance of the stuff.
The basic out of the box is going to be so much faster, but your Photoshop and your Illustrator and your Adobe, I don't even know if Adobe Acrobat is actually running on Intel yet. And a lot of their little apps that you might like might not be running on Intel.
Okay, well, the razor blades are more expensive than the razor.
That's true.
And so I have to give some serious thought.
You really should. Take a look at all the apps you use. See if the company that produces it has an Intel version and see what the upgrade path is like. And maybe it's cheap.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much for your advice.
You're welcome.
Keep up the great work.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
We'll take some other calls. We're halfway through the show, or halfway through the calling section of the show. In the air with me is Miles Elam and Sean Cleveland. Miles Elam is a software developer. Sean Cleveland is a hardware guy, and he knows everything. I try to fill in where I can.
I know everything.
The phone numbers to call in and ask us a question, 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, 476-2800, that's in the 831 area code, or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. We'll take your calls, questions, and comments about anything you'd like right now. Mr. Cleveland.
Can we get geeky real quick?
No.
Of
course, man.
Oh,
geeky.
Let's talk a little
always
geek here.
Geeky.
So the Hypertransport Consortium ratified Hypertransport 3.0 this past week.
What's Hypertransport?
Hypertransport is a high-speed, low-latency, chip-to-chip interconnect that's used on motherboards to connect the various chips together, including the processor.
Replacing Northbridge?
Let's not get there.
Okay.
Let's just talk about chips. So you've got, in an AMD world, you've got your processor, the AMD processor.
Mm-hmm.
It uses Hypertransport. It has Hypertransport built directly onto the chip.
Okay.
And that's what the other chips on the motherboard in your system, that's how it talks to the AMD processor.
So there's a chip that also manages like PCI Express, and the processor and PCI Express.
Yeah, your video, everything that goes down to your hard drive connection.
Does the memory access
your Ethernet? Everything is connected with HyperTransport between the chips.
So that's what HyperTransport is. All right.
So there's a new version, 3.0, that was ratified. And what it does is it increases the speed of HyperTransport from 1.4 gigahertz. Actually, right now, most motherboards only run at 1 gigahertz.
Mm-hmm. And you're talking about the front side bus?
Yes, that's it. It's part of the front side bus, the speed between your Northbridge, Southbridge chips.
Sure.
That's what we're talking about.
Okay.
So it increases it from 1.4 gigahertz, which is what HyperTransport 2 supports now, to 2.6 gigahertz. And what that means is a total aggregate bandwidth, and I'm talking bandwidth in both directions.
Because
it's a serial interface, and it communicates high speed in both directions simultaneously. And there are different widths of the bus, so you don't have to use the largest connection. But if you did, you would have 20.8 gigabytes
per second
of data throughput.
Wow, that's 20.8
gigabytes.
Would that be a 64-bit word in 64-bit or a 32-bit?
That's 16.
Oh, 16. Wow.
16.
So HyperTransport only goes 16-1. That is really
fast. The actual by 16, they have not increased the width of the bus, but the speed, the transmission speed, which is how they get to those.
Cool. Well, that's
so
great.
They've also increased the length of the connection. So before it was more like, 10 to 12 inches, if you're lucky.
Mm-hmm.
Not that you really need
that
on a
motherboard. That's pretty much the size of motherboards.
But they're using this in server environments, too.
Do they connect machines together?
Now they can have a meter. And now they've got external connections.
Whoa, so you can plug a HyperTransport cable between two computers?
Yes. In fact, that was the other half of the announcement was called HTX. It's a low voltage differential signaling link that allows for chassis-to-chassis HyperTransport
communication. Oh, man, so you could do supercomputers with it, have that kind of access between them.
There's some really cool stuff. They've added some other cool technologies to it, too, hot plugging.
Oh, really? So you can actually...
hot plug HyperTransport, yeah.
Could HyperTransport replace things like FireWire and USB?
It was meant to compete with PCI Express, which is the video standard right now. That's the technology that links that we're using with the current video cards.
So on
even Intel and AMD, on both of those architectures, between the Northbridge and Southbridge chips and the video slot, that's PCI Express. And PCI Express replaces PCI.
But HyperTransport connects to the front of that, so you go through both to deal with video.
Yes.
Okay, so theoretically, you could replace the PCI Express with HyperTransport, and then you only have a...
Now, on the Intel side, they just use PCI Express to connect all their chips together.
Well, Sean, I don't know why you said that was getting geeky. I followed everything you said. Thank you very much.
I don't know what they're going to use that bandwidth for, but... I'm sure someone will stand up and create something that we all need.
Let's hope. In SoCal, we have Moose joining us. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi, my name is Moose. How are you doing?
Quite well. What's your question?
Did you guys touch on, I missed your news area, and did you touch on the pending legislation in Congress about the telecommunication industry taking control of, tiering all your access to the internet so that if you don't pay more money that they're going to make it so that you get slower information and
We did cover that story.
I did touch it in
maybe 2 weeks
briefly,
ago.
Briefly, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty scary.
Yeah, the basic concept is that the telcos actually control the bandwidth on the internet and that the idea would be that the telcos would make money based on how much traffic you use, which is not really how it works for the end user right now, though it does work for ISPs that way.
Uh-huh.
I don't know much about the legislation. Miles, are you a little more up to speed with this, Mr. Politics Geek?
What it's basically saying is that right now ISPs, no matter what content goes through, is anonymous. Like, we access Google or Gmail or Yahoo Mail.
Or YouTube. Try YouTube, YouTube, I believe, .com. Mm-hmm. Video streaming for free.
Right. But what the telecommunication company we're talking about, and many of the cable companies as well, was being able to put in a tiered access to say, well, you can have this general access, but if you pay a little bit more, then you can have this access and be guaranteed bandwidth. In other words, shaking down Google.
And the basic concept would be
recharging people for bandwidth. For example, Google pays for their bandwidth.
Right.
They pay for people to access their video site, their mail site.
Uh-huh.
And we as consumers pay for our ISP our DSL connections, our cable connections, our dial-up connections. And what they're saying is they want to charge an additional fee to get this better service.
And it's based on the content on that line. So like right now, you can go up and do as much searching of Google as you possibly want. But if you then go to video.google, then the telco would say, well, that content's actually video work, and therefore it's a different cost associated. And therefore we're going to charge the ISP because more of their subscribers are using television online, if you will.
Charging Google. This is not charging the ISP. They're already on the other end.
Oh, I see. They're charging Google for the access.
Yes. They're basically charging Google to say, well, if you pay this more, we'll guarantee that you'll get a certain amount of bandwidth to the customer.
But I don't like it.
If you don't, then you're going to be... lends itself open for abuse. Saying like, oh, well, we'll just give them this really slow, almost dial-up speed.
And that would be killing us, for example, because like we, you know, podcast and KOSP podcasts on kind of smaller ISPs.
Yeah, pretty good right now.
And to make that such that, depending on the content we put up, it costs more is not so good. Thank you for that, pinging us about that.
And also the cable companies are going to block the cities from being able to deal with the cable companies to make us have local access and stuff like that. I mean, it's a pretty wide sweeping.
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, every time you get these kind of telco kind of bills, a lot of things gets added on. I'm not familiar with the cable company issues, but of course the cable companies and the telcos kind of are merging, but they also have very different, the way they deal with the customers is a little different as well.
Well, there's something they're voting on, I think, this week or next week, right now. I mean, it's pretty important.
Yeah.
So if you guys, anybody gives a darn, they should call up their congresspeople or senators or whatever. And
Miles, would you give us a little, do a little blog thing on the show page today, or just kind of have some links about these pending bills?
I'm working on it, man.
Miles is working away with the tools that I built. Yeah.
Whipping it out.
Thank you, Moose, for the call.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye-bye. We can get some more calls in, so go ahead and give us a ring. Give Rick a ring. Rick will answer the phone and plug you into us. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. I'll do that one more time, nice and slow. The phone numbers are... Well, first off, you can call with any kind of questions of technology. You got a broken computer? We can help you. You want to know how to make a flintlock axe? We can help you out. All right, 476-2800. Toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Mr. Cleveland.
So I got another little news story here. Cheap Trick and the Allman Brothers are suing Sony, claiming they're being shortchanged for royalties on songs downloaded legally over the internet.
This is that story that I was talking about, yeah.
So it's you know... We're getting back to, you know, where's the money going to then? And
this whole idea that a band signs up with the company that publishes them, Sony in this case, they make CDs. Depending on how many CD sales and how much the band owes the company for doing all the work they've done, basically they get royalty based off the CDs. What's going on here is that they're selling stuff online and not necessarily giving some of that money back to the artist.
Yeah, what the suit is claiming is the record company is treating digital downloads like traditional record sales rather than licensed music. So what it's doing is triggering a different royalty deal.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're saying is the record company deducts fees for extra costs, such as what does it take to press vinyl, packaging charges, restocking costs, losses due to breakage. They're putting that on digital downloads, which is ludicrous.
So in the CD realm of music, there's a whole bunch of extra costs about the manufacture of the CDs. And so the label's still taking that money away from the artist.
Because they're claiming that the previous record contracts overrule the newer ones.
Right.
So instead of half of the money going to the artist, half of that 99 cents per song, Sony's keeping 70 cents. And only the band are only really walking away with 4.5 cents.
And that would be the 50-50 rate would be for licensing. So like if the publisher puts their song in a movie deal, then 50% of the revenue from that goes
to the
artist.
They say 50% up front in the story. This is at Yahoo News.
Yeah.
But supposedly 30 cents are rightfully theirs. Mm-hmm. So there's probably
so
some overhead.
Overhead.
Yeah, but still, you know, 4.5 cents versus 30 cents, I'd be upset.
Difference. Well, thank you for that. Great, another call. From Santa Cruz, Barbara, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi, my parents are cruisers on a sailboat, and they wanted me to look into Skype as far as they'll be going down island, Windward Islands, and wanting to use their cell phone through internet hookup, and I was wondering what you knew about it.
Okay, well, are they bringing a computer with them?
Yes, they have a laptop.
Okay. Well, Skype, I wouldn't really try to put a phone in that situation from the side of their use. Basically, Skype is an internet chat application and infrastructure. You get a pair of headphones that also has a microphone on it. you plug in your computer and you make a call, but it's actually just between two computers.
I see.
You communicate that way.
Uh-huh.
I guess there Skype, you can make phone calls as well. I don't know what the process is for Skype on phone calls through like the continental U.S. or not. I'm not totally familiar with that. But basically, it's pretty easy to set up. It's a free application. It works like Apple iChat. And it's great. We've done interviews with Skype.
You know, Chris Dunphy does, because he's got a trailer and he's driving across the United States. He's got a cell phone with a Bluetooth connection to his laptop. And he sets up a data connection that way and does his instant messaging. I don't know how a Skype would work over that kind of situation.
It works. You just have to have some bandwidth behind it. You know,
yeah,
it's really
depends on where the boat is in the ocean. And
well, no, they would use Bluetooth with internet cafe kind of setups where it's wireless and.
Well, not Bluetooth for internet cafe.
Or
Wi-Fi.
Yeah, Wi-Fi.
Right. So in the ship, they're going to have some kind of bandwidth. They're going to have Wi-Fi.
Yeah. It wouldn't be when they'd be out to sea. They'd be somewhere close to where they could.
First off, have they left yet?
No.
Okay. Go ahead and start working on it now from the homes.
Mm-hmm.
If it works now, then when you're on the road anywhere else, it'll still function. It just might be more restricted on bandwidth.
And how do you spell
Skype? Skype.
Okay.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Good. Thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
And good luck.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye. We're going to take one more call today from San Miguel. Robin, welcome. Hey. Welcome to Geek Speak.
Hello.
Yeah, we can hear you. It's a little crackly, but what's your
little
question?
A little crackly. We're having phone difficulty. Listen, as usual, your technology is way ahead of me. I'm still trying to figure out how to download music to CDs.
Mm-hmm.
I've pulled up a few sites, and they want you to sign up, you know, to pay a certain amount of money, like to subscribe, before you even know what their content is.
Mm-hmm.
So what do I do?
So I think the simplest thing is to use iTunes, honestly, because I know how it works. That's what I would do. A lot of the companies offer this. I don't know the exact process on taking other music that you've downloaded and burning CDs, what the process like from Real Store or Sony. I wouldn't use Sony right now because it looks like they're not paying the artists as much as they should. But iTunes, one of the early pioneers in doing this, has a lot of its Apple, basically. The application iTunes is free. You can download it on pretty much any operating system, I believe. And then you can browse the whole thing and look at all the music. You can listen to some of the songs, and then you can choose to download. Once you start choosing to download, you actually have to fill out an account and create an account. So you can listen and check beforehand.
Are you looking for specific music?
Well, a lot of kind of music that I hear on the open road, KUSP type music, mm-hmm. not mainstream type stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to find all of it. It's hard. I mean, if you really want to go like with getting the music, don't even do downloading. Go buy you know, really special albums. Charlie Lang, who does Two Steps in the Blues on Fridays, really wonderful show. He actually has a storefront, an online storefront, and he sells records. That's his business. He never promotes it on his show because, of course, this is nonprofit, and we're not trying to promote ourselves.
Uh-huh.
By the way, I've got a little business. No, I'm just kidding. Charlie's got this great site. I think it's called BlueBeatMusic.com.
Yep, BlueBeatMusic.com.
And I'll promote it. I should promote it every show because it's cool. But that, of course, means that you're buying actual physical stuff. From iTunes, you are not going to find this rare stuff you hear on KSP because it's rare. Thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it.
Okay, so iTunes and Real Store, you suggest?
iTunes only.
Okay.
That's my recommendation.
Thanks.
Or Blue Beat Music. Thank you very much for the call. Bye-bye. All right. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. The geeks this morning, Sean Cleveland and Miles Elam answering our phones. Rick Fellman, thank you very much for supporting Geek Speak, you guys. To those that called in and are listening, thank you for supporting us. Without you, it would just be us geeking out. And who wants to listen to that? Geek Speak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission.